You've eaten Gotham's wealth, its spirit, but your feast is nearly over.
This is not my home. It's an operating table. And I'm the surgeon.
Why aren't you laughing?
From this moment on, none of you are safe.
Welcome to the Batman Book Club, a podcast exploring the Dark Knight Library. I'm your host, Ryan Lauer. The Batman Book Club is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. Just go to batmanonfilm.com, click on podcasts, and you'll find the Batman Podcast Network that has a whole list of other Bat-related shows that also like to dive into other nerdy subjects that we all love to frolic about in our free time. Batman Book Club is also on Patreon. If you like what's going on with the show and you want to help support the show, just go to patreon.com/thebatmanbc. Now, thank you for listening to episode 192, Dark Age. As you can see in the title, we're not just talking about a book. I have a very special guest with me today. He's a very accomplished writer. He's done such marvelous books like The Flintstones, Snagglepuss. He's dipped into the Bat world before, and he's the writer of Batman Dark Age. It's Mark Russell. Mark, thanks for coming on the Batman Book Club.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. And we are going to talk all things Batman for sure. But I wanted to tell you personally that I'm a big fan of Halloween season, as long as I can remember. And the biggest grab for me for Halloween was always the monster cereals. So I love your book, Cereal.
Loved it.
What a great idea. Like everything about it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to write. I will say that.
Yeah. As I was like looking up stuff on that, were the monster cereal like this story? Did an Edgar Allan Poe compilation, like two volumes? Did they pop up in those?
Yeah, some of them were serialized in the Edgar Allan Poe Snifter of Terror series that Ahoy ran. Not all of them. But yeah, that was kind of where they originated in comic form. But even before that, they were a series of Facebook posts, like random Facebook posts.
Oh my gosh. Just
trying to be funny, talking like having these really Baroque conversations between mm-hmm. Frankenberry and Count Chocula and Captain Crunch and stuff, as if they were like characters in Game of Thrones or something. And
oh my gosh.
Ironically, that's sort of what led to me having a career in comics, because one
really?
Of the people who was sort of reading these dialogues was Marie Javens, and she was had just been hired on as an editor at DC Comics, and her first assignment was to find a writer for the reboot they wanted to do of Perez, which mm-hmm. you know they said, well, find somebody who can write funny and you know works well with established properties. So she had just been reading these serial monster things that were posting on Facebook. Well, what about that guy? Wow. So yeah, I, to the serial monsters, I owe my entrance into comics.
And fantastic. And now it's given me some like two other things to track down, because I have to read more of the serial monsters as well. I thought it was fantastic. So let's talk a little Batman, shall we? I mean, that's why we're here. And
that's
since
why people are listening.
Yeah, the first time, this is your first time on the show. I ask anybody who's on for the first time, like, what's your favorite Batman story?
I think my favorite overall is probably Court of Owls.
Court of Owls. Oh, nice. Good pick. Were you in from the from issue one on that? Like, were you reading it as it was coming out?
No, I had to go back to issue one, but I started in the middle. But yeah, I really liked it.
Cool. Were you tripped also on issue five on the upside down, thinking it was a misprint sort of deal? Or
yeah, I think that's you know kind of what made me think, oh, I need to really go back and read the first issue. I just thought it was really inventive and really what's the word I'm looking for? Visceral. It was very mm-hmm. visceral and comic.
Definitely. I think especially, issue five is that one, because at the end of the trippiness is when Talon even like guts Batman too. And that's like, what is going on here? What a story.
Batman Dark Age is not that kind of story, but this is what I like though about Batman is that you can tell pretty much any kind of story using this mm-hmm. character.
Yeah.
He's very versatile genre-wise, as we see in the movies. I mean, there's no two Batman movies are alike. I mean, the Tim Burton Batman movies are very different than, you know, the Batman, which is very different than Joker, which is very, you know, they're all kind of like, it's a Rorschach print of how you want to approach this universe, which has always been one of the appeals to me of working in a universe that can accommodate something both like the Adam West Batman 66 and the Dark Knight, you know?
Yeah. And he fits, he's so malleable. He fits into, he could fit anywhere at any time, everywhere, everything, everywhere, all at once, basically. it's what Batman does. So for Batman Dark Age, obviously anybody that's, that was reading, you see the direct almost link to Superman Space Age that you and also the very talented Michael Allred and Laura Allred also did. So where, I guess, was the origin since of Batman Dark Age? How did this come about?
Well, it started because I was writing all these scenes for Batman and Superman Space Age, as you probably know, having read that. There's actually a lot of Batmans in the Superman comic.
Surprise, but I was having to leave stuff out.
I was having to leave stuff out. So I thought, well, really what I have is sort of the germ of a whole other book about Batman, about the same sort of premise where they're in a doomed universe. But to see it through Batman's perspective, who sees his role as fighting for Gotham, not fighting for the universe, not fighting for the earth. And he also considers it sort of an annoyance, a distraction for him to go out of Gotham and help save the world because he's so concerned with, you know, I think the key difference between Batman and Superman is that to Batman, justice is local. It's like you are, if you're not saving the people around you, then you aren't really working. You need to be, it's like you can't be an architect in an air conditioned office looking at blueprints for humanity. You need to be out there with the construction workers, you know, building the foundation and laying the wiring. That's kind of what way he sees himself.
Wow. That's a really cool perspective. I've never actually like heard it that much or heard it like in worded that way before. So you had so much, what do you want to say? Maybe ideas rolling with Batman while doing Superman. So I guess, was it that hard for you to then to present this idea of like, hey, you like the Superman book. I have a Batman book that I'd really like to do as well.
Yeah. I pitched the Batman book before we were even done with the Superman book.
Oh, nice.
I created like an outline, pretty extensive outline. One, probably the longest, most involved outline I've ever written for a pitch before. And it, luckily it got approved. And actually it was part of like a bigger pitch to maybe do a trilogy, which I'm hoping we'll still be able to do with a third volume about Wonder Woman.
Oh, cool. That'd have been my guess. It was like, I mean, the Trinity, right? The Trinity for a trilogy.
Yes. With
the way that Superman was released, I don't know if it was every other month or what, but I do know it was three books and like 90 pages for each book. And it seems like Dark Age is going to be six books at like 40-ish pages.
Yeah. So it'll be the same length when it's done. But yeah, we're doing it six increments instead of three.
Was that by design?
Downs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think part of it was that, you know, that when you do three volumes, it has a $10 sticker price, which is sort of steep for people in the comic book shop or maybe looking at making an impulse buy, which I understand. I mean, value wise, it's great because you're getting basically four comic books for $10. But a lot of people who shop in comic book shops, including myself, like, you know, if they're buying something on impulse, they're maybe buying something they're not totally sold on. So they want to buy one issue to see if it's right for them. Mm-hmm. And it's a little steeper to do that when you're asking $10 an issue. That, and I think the other advantage of going to six issues is that it makes the story, I think, a little more urgent because you have to have these good breaking points. You have to have these good sort of climaxes to the stories. So I think this works better with a story like Batman than with Superman because it is very much about street violence and crime and this sort of chess match he's created with the villains in the story. So I think it lends itself much better to like having six ending points than Superman's story did.
Gotcha. I was really just complete like a compliment for sure, but I was really surprised even in that Superman Space Age story how much story was in each book. And then reading at this point, I've read book one of Dark Age, and I'm still, even with that, so that's half the length of book one of Superman, but still so much story, I think, that is in that one. And by the final page, you know, too, it's like, we still have a long way to go as far as like Bruce's journey in this incarnation. Yeah.
No, by the time, you know, issue one ends, he's not even really Batman yet. He's still a kid. So it is very, you know, I appreciate people like who are willing to come along for the journey, but it will be, you know, and I think issue one is exciting. It has its own sort of, I mean, I think it's a really good retelling of the Batman origin story. People are going to read things I've never read in a Batman comic before, but it is very much like a building, doing the work, creating the, you know, taking its time, getting to why, how Batman becomes Batman and why.
Did that feel maybe like a daunting task to you to enter the origin story phase?
Yeah. And I think that the daunting part is that, well, this is where the danger is, that you start doing just sort of like a tasteful homage to all the Batman that's before. And there's nobody wants to read that. That's the, you know, that's not, everyone's already, everyone knows the story. So if you're not going to sort of break the cookie jar and do something new with it, then what's the point? What's the point of even going? And for me, the thing I always found a little wanting about this, the Batman origin story, was that, yes, he witnesses his parents being murdered, very tragic. And then he's like Batman the next day, you know, or it sets him on this trajectory where there's like, you know, a 2-page montage where he's doing training. And then he's Batman. And I thought, no, there's a whole lifetime there between that moment where the beautiful, loving, wealthy life he thought he was going to have is taken from him. And from him becoming like the Dark Knight of the streets of Gotham. Like, that's a whole lifetime in and of itself. You need to, you know, do justice to that character and what sorts of things they were going through to get from point A to point B.
And I think something, I don't want to say too much, but like something that I really actually appreciated this was that time spent of Bruce kind of figuring himself out as well. Because much like you said, of like, maybe like nobody wants to read that when it comes to an origin story, Batman Begins was 19 years ago, yet people still feel like that kind of is very recent, to where they feel like, I've just experienced Batman's origin. Year one is, 30 whatever years old by now, and people can still feel like, well, I just read his origin. So I can only imagine, like, in your shoes approaching that story of like, no, I've got a fresh idea. It's not something that we have seen before. There is a journey that's different, and something that comic readers would, you know, would jump on board with rather than like scoff at.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I think that comic readers' memories have gotten, as you say, much longer. Like, we have a much longer, much greater breadth of understanding of the Batman story and of other superhero stories now than readers used to. Because it used to be that the readers aged out of comics. In the 1950s and 60s, you know, comics were something you read when you were like 8, 9, 10 years old, and then you aged out of them. But the people who read, you know, Batman Year One or The Dark Knight Returns when they were like, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old are the people who are still reading Batman today. So they have a much longer, much more Talmudic understanding of the Batman character in the universe. So it's harder to do something that's sort of surprising or new to people. And I thought, well, the one thing I don't think I've seen, and the one thing I think I would want to write that would be me, you know, putting my DNA into the Batman story, would be going into his own thoughts and how he sees himself and how he, you know, like, so we're actually hearing the story of Batman as told by Bruce Wayne as a very old man. And he's retelling the story about, you know, he's telling the world for the first time the story about Batman. And it's filled with like his sort of regrets and his thoughts, and like, you know, what he wishes he'd done differently, or the pain he was experiencing, you know, while he was going through these things. And I think that's kind of unique. I can't remember seeing that before, but, and I think also it lends another dimension to the Batman character. It makes him more of a sort of a philosophical and sort of nuanced human being.
There's something I really wish I could remember where I'd read it before, but it was almost like advice that a writer had said to future and aspiring writers of like, if you want the readers on your side, open up with a sad story from the get-go. And as you were just saying that, because I'd almost even, like in my mind, I was going beyond like that, the beginning, but the beginning does open up in a sense, a reflective state of Bruce, and you understand where he is at that point when you open and everything. And it does get you on his side a little bit because you do feel for him in that position and where he's at. So I don't like, that's a good way to draw you in a little bit more of like, I mean, we're already on Bruce's side. I mean, we're Batman fans. If we're reading it, we're Batman fans.
Yeah. And I think also that we all have these sort of primordial traumas that do sort of set us on a trajectory, not necessarily deterministically. This is, you know, your parents were, you know, killed in a car wreck. Therefore you're going to devote your life to auto safety. Not like in that sense, but in the sense that, you know, you realize very early on that you're sort of at the fate of the world, that things are going to happen to you and you are not going to see them coming. And that's what life is largely going to be. It's going to be picking up the pieces after disasters. Mm-hmm. And this is what makes us who we are, how well we seal up the cracks in the ship as we hit iceberg rocks.
Mm-hmm. I think also with like the Bruce aspect in this is, I think he demonstrates very realistic view of a, you can almost say, a trust fund teenager that doesn't necessarily have, you know, rules and parameters too. Cause God, like, I don't want to think of if I was in that position for a multitude of reasons, but me as a teenager having freedom, I look back now and there were times that I was like, oh, I know I was good and I meant well. And then there were times I'm like, man, I was a little shit. I did not. I'm glad I had parents there to crack.
No,
the whip.
there are times when writing out was painful because I could see myself as a teenager.
Yeah.
If I had that situation, doing the same things and, you know, and regretting it, like regretting things I just said glibly to people that were mean or, you know, especially like people who care about you and have been taking care of you. And then you just sort of like, you know, sort of shortcut them and stuff. It's like that.
Yeah.
I still think about things I've said to my mom that were really mean, you know, when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
and also, you know, just like the privilege. I mean, privilege is sort of a toy, and it, you know, it's hard to imagine any of us having that kind of freedom and that kind of money at our disposal and not using it in some questionable ways.
Yeah. I think that's fresh too. Because we do have, as you kind of just mentioned, of 2 pages and later, and all of a sudden Bruce Wayne is Batman now. He's done the training and the quick montage or whatever. So we're getting to see this of like seeing this character growth that I think, again, only book one is all I've seen, but it's going to be quite a journey, I think,
I think
the final book.
The growth he does as a human being, like getting to the point where he realizes that he's going from the person who needs to be protected to the person who needs to be protecting.
Yeah.
I think that's as important as, you know, the combat training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So are you, since it's 6 books in length, are you completely finished with the scripting phase of the whole series?
No, okay. I'm working on the 6th and final one now.
Okay.
So Mike and Laura are currently at work on the 4th volume.
Okay. So.
It's coming, coming along, but yes, not quite done yet.
That's always fascinating to me. So come book 6, when that's about to come out, I will probably come back and listen to our conversation right now, because that's a really fun, you know, time to think about like, oh, what little I knew then compared to now.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that too. The idea that you gauge your guesswork or what you thought was going to happen. You gauge your expectations against what actually happened. And it's sort of amusing sometimes to find out how off your expectations were, and also kind of rewarding, I think, to, you know, if you are surprised, if, you know, what I got was better than what I expected. I feel like that's a really good experience for a reader where they have expectations and you not only subvert them, but you give them something better than what they thought they were going to get. That's, I think, always the goal as a writer.
Absolutely. Did you grow up reading Batman comics then?
I was not a big Batman reader. I mean, I read sort of the classics, you know, I read like Dark Knight Returns and stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember probably the first comic book I ever bought with my own money was a Batman comic. And I bought it because it had because the cover just seemed like the most messed up cover on the shelf. It was Batman. And I don't remember which issue, but it was like Batman hanging upside down as like the gong inside like a bell in a belfry.
Huh.
So it was a crazy cover, and there were like bats and stuff, and I thought,
yeah,
I gotta find out how he got into that situation.
Sure.
And this is like in the 1970s, but yeah, I think that was like, he always sort of had that mystique where it's, mm-hmm. it's like, you kind of tell from the cover what Mighty Mouse is going to be doing, or, you know, what Little Lulu is going to be doing. You have no idea what Batman's going to be up to.
That's a good cover. I can't picture it. Now I'm going to have to go to the Google machine and just type in Batman gong or something.
A little bit, but that's what I remember, just being kind of like blown away by the imagery. Plus it felt like very sort of grown up for a kid.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, that's probably why I had to spend my own money. Cause I probably understood there's no way my mom was going to buy this comic book for me.
There's, for me, I mean, as a kid, some of my first covers I saw were, there's a Detective Comics Norm Breyfogle one, and it was Catwoman and Catman, and Batman was laying in the foreground. They were in silhouette, and Batman was like shredded across the front, and it terrified me as a kid. So I'm like, that's a scary image. And then seeing Kelly Jones covers of like one during the Nightfall phase where it's Zazz behind Batman with a knife, and I'm like, like very striking. But then, much like you, of like, but I gotta see what happens in this. Like, Batman's gonna get stabbed. I hope he doesn't.
Right.
Like, it's very strong imagery.
Spend your whole childhood, you know, wanting to like peek behind the door and see what's going on in the adult world.
Yeah, exactly.
I think for a lot of us, the superhero comics were sort of that first peek we are allowed. Mm-hmm. This is what, you know, adults do when they're, you know, because everyone assumed, oh, they're either sanitary and they're safe for children and they all have good morals and messages, which wasn't always the case.
Yeah.
But they were a lot. It was one of the few sort of glimpses that were allowed to us as children, like what adults are up to.
Yeah. So I guess for that, and how we've already kind of discussed about how Batman's so malleable and everything, how did you figure out kind of like the tone that you wanted for this story? I know that's probably easier for this considering it's very similar to Superman vibes, Superman Space Age, but I'll let you answer it in case you had a different process.
Well, I think that the tone is similar to Superman in that it's somebody looking back. The narration is about somebody looking back and commenting on things that have already happened. But I think it's also very different in that the Superman narration is very much about hope and about like what he was trying to accomplish and about how much he feels about the people around him. And the Batman one's much more, because it's him as an old man, and most of the characters in the story that he's talking about are dead. So it's very much like talking about how much he misses these people, or how, you know, how things he wishes he'd known then that he knows now, and about his regrets. So it's sort of a darker, sadder story, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Than Superman one.
Yeah. So with that story, I'm not pushing for, let me know how it ends, but like, what were you looking for this? You know, this big stale, what, like this big story, what do you want to accomplish with this?
Well, I think what I want to do is to like people understand like why Batman loved the city so much, why he loved the city that he grew up. Because I feel like this is something that we're going through. Where we're undervaluing our cities. It's a time where it's very sort of culturally, it feels pervasive. Oh, the cities are just cesspools and they're garbage, and you know, make jokes about the cities because they're still reeling from the after effects of COVID and all these social problems like fentanyl and homelessness and stuff. But the cities to Batman are like, this is the social experiment that proves whether or not human beings can live together in large numbers. And if we can't live together in a city, then what chance is there for 8 billion of us to share a planet together?
Yeah.
And so I think he sees like Gotham as like almost like this cosmic referendum on whether or not the human race is headed for extinction. And he sees the city as like sort of his, he's not like Superman. He's not immortal. He doesn't have, you know, super strength or flight, but he's a man, and he's a man who's, his scale of abilities is big enough to help one city survive. Mm-hmm. And that's what he.
So it's interesting because what just popped in my head actually was like, I believe Court of Owls, I think the opening panel is something about the focus of Gotham. And actually the Court of Owls story itself too had an emphasis on Bruce's what do you want to say, devotion to the city. And they're like, Scott Snyder did focus on Gotham itself. So I do like that. That's probably why
it resonates with me, because it's very much about Batman's relationship with Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably his key relationship in you know, the whole story.
Uh-huh. Huh. Well done. Like I said before, the Allreds, Michael and Laura Allred, are heavily involved in the look and the art of this book. Did it take much on your end to sign them up for this book, or are they all in? Because they already did some Batman.
Yeah, we were all in on this book before the Superman one even started.
Okay.
We were all
okay.
jonesing to do
awesome.
This book. And I think, particularly Mike, I think Batman's his favorite. Like, he's got ton of Batman stuff in his house, and he's a big, I think Batman, you know, going back to the 60s and the original TV show, I think he's always been a huge Batman fan. So I think he was really excited to be able to do this book.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit, what's a process like from your end of the, you know, as the writer, when like scripting, sending a script to an artist, are there conversations taking place on, in this case, on Michael's end, of his ideas, or is it just you let him go and then when he's done, he just sends it to you and we're like, all right, we're good?
Yeah, we've had some conversations. We had a lot of conversations leading up to and during Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a pretty good idea of how we operate together. And I would describe it as, you know, me making suggestions, the script of suggestions to Mike. Mm-hmm. It's like, the dialogue and the captions are what I'm in charge of. And I will, those will be in the story the way I see fit. But in terms of like, I'll write him a full script with all, you know, every page broken down into panels, but it's always with the presumption that Mike can ignore it. Mike has a sort of, if he wants to like dump half the panels off the page and create like a big panel or move a bunch of panels to the next page and create a splash page, mm-hmm. he has complete freedom to draw what he wants to draw, which I, you know, I, it always makes it better when he chooses it.
Sure. Do you basically see each page as it's finished?
Yeah, he sends in the pages. Usually sends them in inked, and then Laura sends them colored like later, usually a couple weeks later. But yeah, let me tell you, that's like being a kid on Christmas morning when you get
it was fresh, really like, just about ready
pages.
To ask that if you get very excited.
Everyone just like chef's kiss. You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I'll gladly take half credit for this.
Sure. three things that definitely spring to mind from the first book, and I'm curious if this is you or if it was Michael or if it was Laura, but like in Bruce's bedroom as a kid, the certain book that he's reading has a nod to a character from the animated series.
I had originally, I forget who I'd put, I think I'd made it like a Sergeant Rock comic or something, and then editor Brittany suggested something else. So I think she's the one who came up with what actually ended up on the book in there. So I guess none of the above.
All right. There we go. I think it always gives, at least from like the people I interact with and everything, when they see that, it always gives them a little extra kick of like, oh, like a little, you know, just like a little.
No, I wanted that page excitement. To have like, you know, a bunch of Easter eggs, because, you know, you're kind of seeing his future journey in this one scene in his bedroom before any of it started yet. And so there's like, you know, like a toy penguin. There's like a little like Batmobile looking car on the ground. He's got like a lamp with like a clown's head you know, as the base. So yeah, we wanted that page. It's one of my favorite pages that
Mike. It's very cool. It's very cool. And also I think on that page too, is his dad comes in and he definitely looks like Clark Gable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I that's not me.
I did not
have any input in that. But yeah, he looks damn stunning. He looks like a handsome man.
Yep, definitely.
Where's that handsome devil going?
Yeah. And then like the last one was definitely like the Wayne Enterprises building itself. I forget the name, and because I work in Chicago and I walk by it all the time. That building in Chicago that was used in Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. Are you aware? Was that all you? I'd assume that was probably Michael.
That was Mike. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
One thing I did, you know, I sent Mike some images of the, which, you know, it's like, this is sending coals to Newcastle because Mike knows everything about pop culture. But I sent him like pictures that I thought would be really cool to model the Batman villains off of. And so they're all like early 70s, late 60s, sort of like glam rockers. Mm-hmm. And like Bowie-esque, like sort of like rock stars, or, you know, Charles Manson and stuff. I thought it would be cool if you did Mad Hatter as Charles Manson, you know, or if you had like Penguin as like as Mark Bolan from T-Rex and stuff. So I sent him a bunch of these sort of pictures I thought would be really good sort of guiding lights for how he handles the villains. And, you know, he's doing his own thing. But that was about the extent of my, like,
sure,
sort of trying to influence Mike Allred, which, you know, it's like he probably has a much better grasp of how that, you know, of that sort of costumery than I do.
Sure. Was it hard for you to contain any like Batman excitement? So you just named some villains. In no way were you saying they're popping up or anything like that, but it hard for you to be okay?
I will say they're not in this first issue, but they're on the way.
Was it easy or hard for you to be like, well, I know of all these villains that Batman has, he's the best rogues gallery, I'm biased,
easily.
Just throw them all in,
not like, in
gotta think of the
DC
story
in comics.
Yeah,
it's just like there's an embarrassment of riches, so many people to choose from.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
That was definitely hard because there's some that don't get in and there's some that don't get as many pages as I wish I could have given them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a testament to just how rich a tapestry that world is. But there's some that sort of like, as I was writing the story, just started taking over kind of the story. Like they just started mm-hmm. insinuating themselves more than I'd intended, just because they seem like the ones who would be kind of like persistent.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously there's a lot more Catwoman. And the one that kind of surprised me is Ra's al Ghul. There's a lot more Ra's al Ghul than I intended in this story, but.
Wow. Oh, I like, okay, so you got some heavy hitters, you just said, of Catwoman and Ra's al Ghul, but then you also, and you mentioned Penguin, but then you said Mad Hatter, and I totally respect of people know who Mad Hatter is, but no, he's not at that A level like those other three are, so I like, gonna give some love to the
yeah, the, there's plenty of B-list characters yeah. that show up in this too, which I always like.
Absolutely. I'm trying to think, the design of Batman is pretty much the same as from the Superman story, isn't he?
Yeah, it's very similar. I mean, his outfit does sort of evolve a little over time as, you know, he becomes better at urban combat and mm-hmm. as, you know, the technology improves. But yeah, it's very sleek and sort of futuristic. It's almost like a mirror of what his father wanted to do with Gotham. Mm-hmm. Father wanted to build this sort of futuristic version of Gotham, the city of tomorrow, and turn into the city of tomorrow. And it doesn't work out that way because he's assassinated. And so those plans never come out. But Batman, in his suit and his armory, sort of takes the technology that was sort of intended for the city of tomorrow. So it looks almost like he's, you know, this they didn't create the city of tomorrow. Instead, he created the night of tomorrow.
Yes. Oh man. So like, you've tackled Flintstones, you've tackled Snagglepuss, I mean Cereal, but these are almost like these pop culture, you know, characters. And I wouldn't say that you've put this, you know, this massive twist on them, but you've done a contemporary story with these in a sense, minus Cereal, I guess, in a little bit. With Batman going back in time, what do you think is there something that's appealing to you to take almost like a little bit of an established, but to, you know, put it through your own lens, your own way of interpreting
it? Yeah. And I think the way I largely do that in this story, and also through Superman Space Age, is setting it against the backdrop of actual history, actual
yeah.
world, which is always something I'm a big history buff, so it's something I'm always eager to sort of write about when I get the chance. And so being able to place, you know, Bruce Wayne against the backdrop of actual historic events, and to like have like the fashions and the architecture and the technology change along with the times in which they really did. To me, that I think that's sort of one of my signatures in this. One of the things that is unique to my approach to this.
You just reminded me because I actually made sure to save it. I used to take it through actual historical in Superman and the inclusion of Martin Luther King. And there was a, let's, when he's in jail with Lois, like I do, I have it saved right here because I just really liked it. And you have Martin Luther King say, like, the simple pleasures, the things we love are not distractions from life, but sources of strength that keep us alive. I love that. Like I that's why I saved it. I put it on my iPad because I'm like, oh, I wow. really like that quote.
Well, that's really great. You know, that story about the Chinese restaurant, going to the Chinese restaurant before mm-hmm. the sit-in, knowing that the regular, that the American restaurant wouldn't serve him. And mm-hmm. so he wanted to get a meal before he got locked up. It was actually a story that Congressman John Lewis told me and a few other people.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, we both had a book come out at the same time at Top Shelf. So we're both at the Top Shelf party, and the Top Shelf sort of post San Diego convention party was held at the Marriott. And they had put out all this sort of Chinese food buffet style. And I was getting Chinese food with John Lewis and Shannon Wheeler. And he told us the story about how this is what he would do when they were going to do a sit-in. He would fill up on Chinese food because the Chinese restaurants they didn't segregate. Anyone could go in there and they would seat everyone. And so you'd have this delicious Chinese meal, and then knowing that he's going to be probably in jail for the next 24 hours. And then when he's sitting there in the holding cell, like probably having just been roughed up by the police, he is thinking back to this, what a wonderful meal he had, like how mm-hmm. delicious this Chinese food was that he had, and about, you know, what he's going to get next time. And that's sort of what gets him through. You know, that is like having to sit in jail or trying to just be served at a lunch counter.
So that whole situation is real, but the lines that you had him say himself, did you come across those, or those were yours that you
wrote? The summary that you just read is my okay. invention. It's me sort of surmising
sure.
what I think he was, you know, telling me the meaning of that story as it means to me.
That's a really, yeah, I just think that, like, in a nutshell, I think that's something that can really, I don't know, just relate to entertainment and the importance of entertainment and the value of entertainment that we can all get in real life. And how you just said I'd imagine it was easier to do take Superman into real life events or real life events into Superman, because you have the outlet of Lois. You sent Lois and Clark to these destinations of things happening in history. Whereas Bruce, you know, Bruce is usually in Gotham. Yeah. So how much history influence is there in Dark Age compared to Space
Gotham
Age?
Is not so much like, you know, I think Superman Space Age is more comprehensive about American history, about everything mm-hmm. the nation was going through at the time. Gotham is more, the story of Batman in Gotham is more about what American cities were going through at that time. Sort of like the, you know, the burning Bronx and the white flight and, you know, the suburbs and the massive crime wave in the 1970s and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think it was very much more about the Vietnam War. You know, it's very much more about what people who were living in a specific place and time would have gone through in America during those times, as opposed to these big sort of historic events like the Kennedy assassination or Watergate.
This is a weird, weird jump, but it's not just because you're sitting here. I'd say this anyway. I think you wrote one of the best Ace the Bat Hound stories in Batman Urban Legends.
I'm so glad you read that, because I felt at the time this was like one of the best things I've ever written. And I have no idea if anyone is reading this.
Yeah. My buddy Pete, he and I for 3 years, like every month we get on and we do an episode, a wrap up episode where we talk about new Batman comics that came out that month, ones we recommend and stuff. And that was one in that Urban Legends line that we both were just like in awe over, like each issue. We just freaking loved that. And I think Carl Mostert?
Yeah,
Mostert. Okay. I think I'd sent something out to him each issue when it came out on art. Maybe I tagged you. I don't know. But it was just like in awe. Like, I loved that story. That being said, can I ask you, does a dog pop up in Dark Age at some point?
No, unfortunately, Ace is one of those characters where it's just there's already so much going on.
Yeah.
I don't really have room.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Understood.
Sorry, Ace.
That's okay. I'd rather know now than hold out hope for 6 months and then not see it. So with that in mind, there's so much going on then. So maybe your first, do you go and like just write a first draft and then go back and cut? Or are you kind of editing yourself as you're creating?
No, I go back and cut. And okay. I do that 3 or 4 times.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like my writing is probably 90% rewriting. Okay. I just get it out knowing, you know, it's not going to be what I wanted. But it's really in the rewriting that it begins to take shape, that it really begins to sort of like, you know, it's almost like when you have a bad image on Netflix because it's buffering and it sort of depixelates. It's like that's what sort of happens, you know, as I'm writing. It sort of depixelates and creates a clear image.
So with this book, at least book one, you know, it's between that 40, 45 pages, probably something like that. How many pages do you think your scripts are? Before you do the edit, like your first draft, how many pages do you think that is?
Well, the scripts themselves are usually about 29, 30 pages. And
okay.
Then, but then I'm tossing stuff out. I probably end up writing about 80 pages for a 40 page script.
Wow. Okay.
Taking stuff out, writing new stuff. I'm moving stuff to other issues. You know, I'm moving things around. It's a very intensive and, it's a disastrous process. It's taxing. I mean, there are some scenes that when you just write them, they come out perfect, as if written by the hand of God. And when you get one of those, just don't question it. Just roll with it, because you need those scenes to sort of come out quickly so you can spend your time dealing with the ones where it's just not working, or you're trying different things, or you're moving it around to a different story. It's kind of like being a teacher in a classroom. There's some students who are just golden, you know, they get everything on the first and they're just really well behaved, and there's other students you got to keep an eye on, and you gotta, you know. So as a teacher of my own script, I really got to like sort of save that attention for the troubled children.
You'd mentioned the editor, Brittany. So I'm always fascinated by the creation process of a story, period. You name it, TV show, movie, comics. You narrow down a script and you think that you've got it. I've always kind of wondered too, an editor in that position. So clearly you're a proven writer, you know? So an editor, you send it off to an editor and like, what do you think their approach is in reading? Is there ever a lot of notes back to you?
I get a lot of notes, but they're usually not really telling me the story doesn't work or anything, because it's usually kind of been through purgatory before they even see it. You know, it's paid its dues before the editor even sees it, because I don't want to waste their time.
Yeah.
But the sorts of notes I get are, you know, questions they have, like, how did he know that this was going to happen? And I thought, oh, yeah, it's like I had an idea in my head how he knew this character was going to be there, but I never really put it in the story. So in a lot of ways, that's kind of the main role that editors, I think that I work with, are what they're doing is they're reading the story to make sure that everything that was in my head actually made it onto the page at some point. Because I'm thinking, well, of course the reader's going to have the same understanding of what's going on than I do, but unless obviously put it on the page, they're not. And so the editor is basically there to serve almost like the first reader. Where it's like, well, I was confused by this part. And I thought, oh, that's because there's no scene to explain why they're there, you know? And so it's very helpful in that sense, because I get snowblind in my own writing. I just assume there's things in the story sometimes that aren't really there.
Mm-hmm. And at this point in this story, so the first 5 books that you've completed, has there been one that stood out to you yet that you felt like, oh, this one I feel like I was totally on and it was a smooth,
I feel like so far my favorite of the ones I've written was the 4th one.
Okay.
Cause I feel like, every scene's a banger and it moves so quickly, cause it's like the culmination of one of the storylines. So it just feels like, it's like this one's going to read really quickly and it's going to feel like almost like the end of the book to a lot of people.
All right, so I'm doing the math right now. I think that should be June.
I think
maybe
that's right.
June.
We
book
get
four.
Like a we get like a gap month between 3 and 4, I think. So maybe
okay.
July.
Maybe July. All right, it's gonna be hot, right in the dead of summer. Book four. Let's see. I definitely want to respect your time. Is there anything else about this that maybe you want to tease, that you want to say, that I haven't asked you about?
Ooh, I have to be sort of careful. I don't want to spoil, but I do want to tease.
All right.
yeah. So I will say that Bruce Wayne gets trained to be Batman from some unlikely sources. And cool. And also he buys a comedy club, and some famous people show up and drop sets at his comedy club.
Okay. Well, that's a great tease. Because now it's a whole blending of made-up characters. Or are these characters based on real people? Or is it the real people that we know? So that good tease. Did it. You spoiled nothing. Except good. The Ace is not going to be in this story. But that's okay.
Sorry. Sorry, Bat-Hound fans.
That's quite all right. I've read... I pursued you asking if you would like to talk to me about this book. Because I did read it. And I really, really liked it. I'm from the Midwest, so the Midwest way is like, if I read it and I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't have pursued to talk to you because I'd feel bad to have to,
way
say
to
I
handle
didn't enjoy it.
That's the way, but, definitely the way to handle it. Pass so, that which you did not enjoy in silence.
Yep. Yeah, others will. But I did really enjoy this. So I highly recommend it, and I will highly recommend it to anybody to give it a shot. And yeah, I want to let you know that I'm all in on book one. Bring me to book four. I want to hurry up and read it now. But
all right.
I'll enjoy it the next 5 months, 6 months, however long for the book to come out. So I appreciate you sitting down and talking to me. Do you have anything that you want to plug, or if you want people to follow you somewhere or anything?
Yeah, I'm on most social media outlets. I probably post the most on Threads and Blue Sky, and my handle is Manrus, Manruss. And also, while I've got you, I just want to mention that the book collection of a creator-owned series I did called Traveling to Mars is coming out in May, and I'm super proud of it. It's easily one of the best things I've ever written, and it's a very Ooh. Sort of personal story, like Batman Dark Age. And so I really hope people will check that out. Maybe pre-orders are due by April 8th. So if you're interested in Traveling to Mars, let your local comic shop know to get you a copy, preferably before April 8th.
Okay. So you just said one of the best things you ever written, and we just talked about you wrote Hounded with Ace the Bat Hound. So
yes.
That's just, it's high praise if you're all about this new story too. So
yeah, no, I feel very strongly about both of them.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate you sitting down and talking to me.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. And buy it. Batman Dark Age, book one. On sale now.